As I sat at my computer, contemplating possible topics for this week's episode, it was hard to get too far from the fact that things are different now, and will probably be that way for a while yet. So some of the things I might have decided to talk about are tabled as well. Just one example. I'm not far on the calendar from when I'd start promoting the summer camps we put on for area teens. But until I know that we'll actually have those camps, I'm not going to devote any time to talking about them, while hoping at some point in the future, when it's safe to do so, I'll be able to hit on them in earnest. That said, rather than focusing on what's not, let's focus on what is. This week, I'd like to share a couple of seasonal items, as it pertains to area hunting, and maybe a thought or two about free time you might have. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Let me state right off a positive and say how thankful I am that we had an actual winter with snow and good travel conditions, though I didn't get out quite as much as I wanted. That's on me, though, not the weather. And I did still get out more than in previous years, so that was absolutely terrific. It's hitting that time of year when I get a bit grumpy with friends on social media, as all of them are trumpeting how great it is that spring is here, while I'm frowning and lamenting the loss of winter. I get it. They like spring as much as I like winter, so I should be happy for them. To that I say, bah humbug, while feeling wistful for the winter that's on its way out. There are some good things that come with every season, including spring. Migratory birds returning is always a great thing, on a couple of levels. First, I love seeing them return to the area from a strictly observational point of view. Our yard, as with many others, plays summer home to a wide variety of songbirds, and the time is rapidly approaching when they'll show up once again. So there's that. And for those who enjoy hunting, yesterday marked the opening of the 2020 Alaska Subsistence Spring-Summer Migratory Bird Harvest Season, which means that returning ducks and geese, as well as a whole host of other species, are once again fair game for harvest. That could be a very welcome thing this year, in particular, as a source of food for the freezer. Probably there are a few ducks and geese here and there that never really went far, but we're likely a few weeks away from big numbers showing up. One person I know who's really into waterfowl hunting always told me Mother's Day weekend in early May was when things get really interesting. With the subsistence season once again open, let's touch on some things connected with that season. Have I talked about these things in the past? Yeah, I have. But they're good things to be reminded about. There are a few things you have to adhere to in order to legally hunt for migratory birds in the spring. If you are 18 or older, you are required to have a state hunting license and a state duck stamp. Except for disabled veterans, those 60 years and older, and those that qualify for a low-income license. You do not have to have a federal duck stamp for the subsistence season. That changed a while back. To say that again, no federal duck stamp, yes on a state hunting license, and yes on a state duck stamp. State stamps and hunting licenses are available from state license vendors, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Office, and online. State duck stamps must be signed in ink across the face and must be carried at all times while hunting waterfowl, but are not required for hunting non-waterfowl species. The stamp costs $10. I bought mine a couple of weeks ago because I had the time and was in the right place. Also, you have to use shot shells that have non-lead shot in them. That's actually been an across-the-board can't-do item since 1991, which means that waterfowl hunting has been a lead-free event, officially and legally, for close to 3 decades. Lead is toxic. What you have to use is non-toxic shot. Non-toxic is defined as any shot type that does not cause sickness and death when ingested by migratory birds. Some common types of metals used in place of lead include steel, tungsten, and bismuth, as well as combinations and alloys. Each has its pros and cons, as well as its supporters and detractors. And it's not just that you can't use lead shot. You can't even be in possession of it while you're hunting migratory birds. So if you have an assortment of shot shells for various species, including upland birds, rattling around in a backpack, shoulder bag, or pocket, take care to make sure none of them are lead shot when you're hunting waterfowl. Just having them on you can get you in trouble. I'd like to believe that with lead being a no-no for so long, legally, that it's pretty much a given that no one carries lead shot while hunting waterfowl. But, just in case, make sure you're toting non-toxic shot. The booklet that spells out what you can and can't do for this season is, according to what I heard, literally in the mail. So hopefully those will be showing up in places like our office and in mailboxes here real soon. There's a short list of prohibited harvest items beyond no lead shot, and a lot of them seem pretty common sense to me. For example, no shotguns larger than 10 gauge, battery or machine guns, fish hooks, poisons, drugs, or explosives. No shooting from a sink box or low-floating device that conceals the hunter beneath the surface of the water. Ditto hunting from any type of aircraft, hunting with the aid of recorded bird calls, or using live birds as decoys. Furthermore, you may not use any vehicle, aircraft, or boat to concentrate, drive, rally, or stir up migratory birds. No shooting across or from a roadway or highway. Specific to us around Bristol Bay, no airboats or jet skis for hunting or transporting hunters. Again, I'm guessing that those things don't come up very often. Shifting gears, but staying on hunting. This past week, March 31st to be specific, was the last day for the federal Nishigaak Peninsula caribou season. I'd like to remind folks to turn in hunt reports, whether you harvested a caribou or not, even if you didn't hunt at all. Hunt reports are critical to make informed management decisions about this herd, and it benefits all of us to have as much information available as possible when those decisions are made. Also, there is this. Failure to turn in a hunt report can lead to being denied a harvest tag for next year's hunt. Don't believe me? Let me read the language from an actual permit. Failure to return the harvest report will result in you being ineligible to receive a permit for the following regulatory year and may result in a fine. That's what it says, word for word. In reminding folks about filing their hunt reports, I'd also remind you that our offices are closed to the public until further notice due to concerns about the coronavirus situation. That doesn't mean reports can't be filed. To file your hunt report, you can fill out the paper copy of the harvest report and mail it through the post office, or you can call 842-8406. Let me say that again, 842-8406, and leave a message with your name, phone number, permit number, sex of caribou, and date of harvest. That's Andy Aderman's office line, and he'll be checking messages to keep up with hunt reports. If you did not hunt or did not harvest a caribou, your report should reflect that and still be turned in. Thanks in advance for being a responsible hunter and getting your report filed in a timely fashion. A last topic for this week. On last week's episode, I suggested a list of activities to consider with regards to having more time at home. I'd like to extend that to give thought to things you can be including your kids in. And, given the social distancing aspect, I'll keep it to just your own kids. As I have in the past suggested, getting any kids involved in outdoor activities is just fine. Not so this time. Keep it to your own. A lot of you are probably doing a lot of this anyway. But having our kids around us so much more is a great opportunity to include them even more. An example. When butchering meat a couple of weeks ago, I went into greater depth on why I cut the way I do, as far as getting it ready for the freezer. And I'm talking about working with my youngest daughter. I realized that in past years, she's always been involved in processing, but usually with a job like helping with the packaging or running the grinder. She had not really been involved in the earlier steps, so we changed that. Not that I am some expert butcher or anything. Frankly, knowing how to care for game meat, from the moment the animal hits the ground until it's wrapped up and in the freezer, is one of the more valuable skills kids around here can learn. You'll have your own activities to consider, and whether or not They are things that would or will be of interest to your kids. My daughter participates in putting together the loads for her rifle and enjoys doing so. So there's going to be more of that in the coming weeks. I've also started to mess around with taxidermy again. I'm working on a couple of fish and some antler mounts, and may work on a shoulder mount here soon. I only recently found out that, yes, she'd be interested in learning how to do some of the things I do with regards to taxidermy, so I'll be including her in those activities in the coming weeks as well. I guess what I'm getting at is to keep your eyes and ears open for yet other chances to include your kids in things tied to the outdoors. Some of this downtime that we're having may be a golden opportunity waiting to be discovered. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.